Hello everyone, welcome to Nuclear Matters at CIL, a series of podcasts brought to you by the Nuclear Law and Policy Team at the Center for International Law, or CIL. Today's podcast is part of our new sub-series on the governance of floating nuclear power plants, or FNPPs. This two-part episode touches on FNPP technology and regional perspectives, where the focus will be on Southeast Asia. I am Nivedita. Together with Denise Cheong, we will be joined in conversation by our special guest, Dr. Victor Nguyen, who is the co-founder and CEO of Center for Strategic Energy and Resources, a global independent think and do tank, and a nuclear technology expert. As part of this podcast, Mr. Nguyen will share his views on FNPP technology developments in part one, as well as regional perspectives, including FNPP governance in part two.
A very warm welcome, Victor, to Nuclear Matters at CIL. It really is our privilege to have you join us to speak to us about floating nuclear power plants. You're someone, Victor, from the region. You're a trained engineer. You are active in the energy policy research space, including covering energy sources, including nuclear energy. So to us, you are quite uniquely placed to come to speak to us about technology and regional perspectives surrounding floating nuclear power plants. So I'd like to start off with a super basic question, just so that everyone's on the same page when we talk about floating nuclear power plants. What are they, and what are some of the models that are being developed? And as between these different models, how are they different?
All right. Thank you, Denise, for the kind invitation. It's really a pleasure to speak on the on this particular subject matter. It is also of my strong interest to look into, you know, floating nuclear power plant development. And, you know, to just jump straight to the point about your question. So to put it very simply, a floating nuclear power plant is a mobile, self-contained nuclear power plant that can generate electricity while floating on water. So that's the standard answer that anybody can give. So what it really says is that floating nuclear power plant, right, is basically the water version, if you like, of land-based nuclear power plant, which typically, when we talk about nuclear power plant, they're always constructed as a power plant project, and you see a large structure on land, whereas floating means reactors at sea or nuclear power plant at sea. And because of floating in nature, usually floating nuclear power plants are built on, for example, a floating barges, right, or a marine engine vessel. So on a barge, these are not self-propelled by definition, so they do not have an engine, they cannot run anywhere, but they can be anchored to a seabed, for example, where they can house the nuclear reactor to produce electricity. And the other type of floating nuclear power plant is the reactors are placed on a ship, and the ship is powered by usually conventional marine engines. So these floating nuclear power plants are in a way self-mobile, so they can self-propel itself, you know, to move from place to place to place, and to produce energy, produce electricity to locations where it's needed. And quickly, we can see that the immediate advantage is that these floating nuclear power plants, they do not require land space. So compared to a land-based power plant, then, you know, one need not worry about, you know, clearing a piece of land, you know, having sufficient land space to accommodate a large nuclear power plant project for that matter. So then quickly we can then see that there are two main components when it comes to floating nuclear power plant. The first part is a nuclear power plant, I just briefly mentioned. The second part is the floating part, which is the barge or the ship. So as I mentioned just a couple of minutes earlier. And the interesting part, or rather the most important part, is actually on the reactor side. So this is where the exciting things about new technology development in a floating nuclear power plant.
You've mentioned essentially two conceptual models. One is a barge, as you mentioned, which presumably would be tugged by a small tugboat that would provide the propulsion. Then the second one you mentioned was marine engine vessel, right? So kind of like a ship. This is where the nuclear power plant will be integrated into the ship. May I ask, I mean, there have been, I think, research done by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology on offshore nuclear power plants, where their model kind of draws on the offshore oil and gas structures I think we've seen in the past. Is that more analogous to your barge category, or is this maybe a third category? So that's my first question. And then my second question was, I think our focus very much has been on power generation, but with these floating nuclear power plants, what other applications, apart from power generation, can you see these power plants providing? And then I think my small follow-up question, when you talked about floating and being deployed in water, and I think your point was well taken that it frees up land space. When you're looking at the marine environment, is there a particular kind of, is there something that's typically by the coast or slightly further out, something within territorial waters? Yeah, so I wonder if you might be able to just speak to these points.
Another type of floating nuclear power plant that some have conceived is to leverage on the existing floating technologies from the oil and gas industry. So it's well known that we know how to build oil rigs, for example, to do offshore drilling, deep sea, and we know how to float these structures. So some propositions came up and say, why don't we have a nuclear reactor? So rather than burning diesel on these platforms, which is polluting the marine environment and having greenhouse gas emissions, let's have a nuclear energy on it. And you can also operate that for a much longer period without refueling. Technically speaking, this is not impossible. But from a practical standpoint, then the nuclear reactor is basically restricted to onboard usage. Right? So whatever the energy that's consumed is for the onshore, for the drilling activities, and for whatever activities supporting the life of the crews and the management team on the vessel. And quickly, the question is, if we are looking at a small modular reactor in the range of several tens of megawatt, or even 50 or 100 megawatt, this is so much of an overkill for an oil and gas floating platform. So essentially, you're going to have so much excess power that you need to figure out what you do with those excess power if you place a reactor on it for the drilling purposes. But having said that, you could still refurbish or retrofit such structures so that you don't have to build a floating barge. Place a reactor on these oil rigs and so-called retired oil rigs, and you know, anchor them somewhere near shore or in a favorable location, so you can put a subsea power cable and produce energies. And so those are so-called, if you talk about from the floating perspective, that will be the kind of technological models that the industry could offer. On the reactor side, which is really where the key concerns or interests are, today we are seeing mainly two types of technology development. One is the pressurized water reactor. We usually call them PWRs, because you see a lot of these acronyms these days and PWRs. The other type is the molten salt reactors. Molten salt reactor, people generally refer to MSR, but don't confuse with small modular reactor, which is SMR. Right? Now, for a PWR reactor, these are, some people call it old technologies. Westinghouse is well known for building AP1000, large PWRs on land. The French has built a serial of PWRs, and they even had the globalization of PWR technology around the world. And so a lot of people saying that maybe, or rather the SMRs that's going to be placed on the barges or boat are merely a scaled down version of these PWRs. To a certain extent, this is true. They are using similar technologies. They are using water as coolant. They are using the same type of fuel, which is uranium dioxide in solid form and inside the reactor core to produce heat, and heat produce power. So this is PWR. Well-known mature technology, And if you were to place it according to the generations of reactors by the International Atomic Energy Agency, then these will probably belong to generation 3 or 3 plus type of technology. They are much safer as compared to whatever we see on land today. But of course, some of the newer plant that's being built are also of similar design. So they're also quite safe in that sense. So that's PWR, one category of technology that can be placed on the barge to produce electricity, and well-known, mature, proven technology. The other type, which is much more advanced, and we typically place them as the generation 4 type of reactors, is the molten salt reactors, or MSRs. It's interesting because these reactors, the fuel is in a liquid form. So in the conventional PWR of most of the nuclear power plant operating world today, the fuel is in solid form. And so naturally you have a concern. So if temperature goes up, if there's an accident, like what we see in Fukushima, the core melt into liquid, penetrating the reactor vessel, get into the ground, and worse still, because the heat keeps accumulating, eventually leading to a hydrogen explosion. So that's something we want to avoid. And here's the starting point, because at the beginning, the core is already in the liquid form. So there's no more chances of melting down anymore because the core is liquid. And because it's liquid and it operates at a relatively higher temperature, in this case, accident will no longer really be, the Fukushima kind of accident will no longer be as relevant as what we normally imagine it. Why? Simply because for a molten salt, at high temperature, in this case, we're talking about 450, 500, maybe even 700 degrees at that level of temperature. It is much easier and faster to lose heat rather than having heat to accumulate within the reactor core. And molten salt, having this, with these special chemical properties, they will solidify into rocks at a temperature of around 400 degrees. So at that temperature, which is already very high, it's actually higher than the operating temperature of PWRs. Molten salt has already become a rock. So there's not going to be any risk of reactor melting down. And because it solidifies into a rock, all nuclear fission reaction stops. So there's no more decay heat accumulation. There will be decay heat, but will not be as severe as you would see in the PWR case. And so many people will call molten salt reactor as Fukushima proof or Fukushima irrelevant kind of design. But of course, come with MSRs, then the challenge is, you know, how do we deal with, for example, fuel management, refueling? Of course, the industry has made some propositions about having onboard chemical plant for salt purification. Industry is also looking to build a supply chain for fresh fuel and also looking at spent fuel management. And also, molten salt reactor operates at a much higher temperature. That means the efficiency to produce power would also be higher than the conventional pressurized water reactors. Another benefit of the high temperature is, in addition to produce high electricity at higher efficiency, we're also looking at industrial applications. So for example, leveraging on the high temperature, we could use that to produce hydrogen, ammonia, or maybe even use it for water desalination. So it's a much more efficient use of heat, rather than just simply producing power. And in some cases, where in one of the studies that I did with molten salt reactors, we could even potentially looking at combined heat and power production. So on one hand, you produce electricity when the power demand is high, and then you can produce hydrogen when there's not enough demand for nuclear to operate. And they also address the problem of nuclear energy being much less flexible as compared to a gas-fired power plant. And you could certainly imagine that with a floating nuclear power plant that is away from shore, we can also save space, whereas compared to an integrated industrial facility management or industrial cluster planning, where if you have a nuclear plant, you would also have certain distance of clearance between the plant and the hydrogen plant. Just Fukushima already told us, hydrogen and nuclear are enemies, they are not friends. So you want to keep a distance between the two. And now you have floating nuclear, that is already at a clear distance from shoreline, where the hydrogen facilities could be located, and so that opens up the opportunity for cross industrial sector development.
Thank you, Victor. If I may jump in here, because I see that you've already addressed one of Denise's follow-up questions about the different functions that a floating nuclear power plant can serve. So if I could just summarize, so aside from power generation, there is also scope for hydrogen, ammonia production, water desalination, industrial heat production. So that's great that there's all these other functions that a floating nuclear power plant can provide. If I may come back, so you've highlighted that there are two FNPP technologies, FNPP being floating nuclear power plants, so the PWR and the MSR technology. And if I understand you correctly, it's really the MSR technology that can be considered the new technology, whereas PWR is just a scaled down version of existing technology. In that case, I guess my first question is, who are the main FNPP vendors who are looking to produce FNPPs using either one or the other technology?
So today in the FNPP vendors, among the vendors, what we see are the existing vendors, or rather the company or the companies and countries that have been building large nuclear reactors are going into PWRs. For example, Rosatom from Russia, China General Nuclear in China, and some other companies that are mostly looking at building, leveraging on their PWR technologies, which they have been building, developing and maturing domestically for many decades to build their FNPPs. And among the startups, if we were to name the three of them that are very active in the region, the first one being Solcon, second one being Seaborg, and the third, Core Power. So these three companies are not really pursuing the PWR technologies. What they are doing is they are looking at the innovative Generation 4, which is molten salt reactors, as a way of supporting their FNPP development. So all of them are looking at different sizes, right? But in the same principle of molten salt reactors. And Solcon was a US origin company. So they are looking at developing molten salt reactors in partnership with some of the national labs and universities in the United States. Seaborg is working on their own molten salt reactor technology. Core Power also is partnering with entities and organizations in the US to develop their molten salt reactors. I would also like to say a few more words about this improved safety of molten salt reactors. Just now I mentioned about the core being a liquid form, it's no issue when the core, when the fuel solidifies at even already at high temperature. One thing I think is worth mentioning is that molten salt reactor, as compared to pressurized water reactor, molten salt reactor operates at much lower pressure. So right, they're operating at atmospheric pressure, meaning there is no pressure differential in a technical term. But what it really does is that in the event something happens, you will not see an explosion outward. Right? When it's just seen in a PWR or pressurized water reactor, because of high pressure and the temperature and pressure will just keep building up. When they reach the critical moment, there will be an explosion. In molten salt reactors, yes, there is still a risk of having accumulating pressures within the reactor vessel, eventually leading to an explosion, but the risk in compared to PWR will be much, much lower. Right? And because of the solidification of molten salt at high temperature, even there may be an explosion, you will not see radioactive gases or radioactive fuel elements speeding, being carried by wind for thousands of kilometers. This would just be a spillage of fuel in rock form in the nearby areas. So in the event something happens, decontamination would also be a lot easier for MSRs. And because MSRs are operating at a high temperature, so this is the thermal efficiency I mentioned about, and that gives you the economics, a better economics of energy, electricity generation, also giving you the possibility of producing hydrogen, which is also a high value add and energy product. And MSR today, there's also two types of fuels that is being discussed. The most dominant, of course, is still the uranium-fueled MSRs. These are uranium fluoride salt, which is well understood by the uranium supply chain or by the nuclear industry, that are being contemplated in the current MSR designs. Another type of design is to use thorium or thorium fluoride as an alternative to uranium. So for countries like India, where there is insufficient uranium, in the way China, where they have to import almost 80-90% of their uranium for their nuclear reactor fleet. Having thorium, in a way, provides diversification of fuel supply and also addresses energy security issues even within the nuclear business. And in the case of China and India, again, within their territory or domestically, they have far more thorium resources as compared to uranium. And globally, thorium is also much more abundant as compared to uranium. And with modern salt reactors, these is also small modular reactors as compared to conventional large ones. So that means you can also benefit from your factory batch production environment to have further cost reductions going forward. So that basically sums up about the pros or advantages of modern salt reactors. In terms of the less positive side of MSRs, which the industry is actively addressing, in terms of technical challenges, as we explained, modern salt reactor operates at a much higher temperature, and in itself is a challenge to, for example, nuclear materials, the reactor vessels, and also to manage the fuel at this high temperature, because it solidifies at 400 degrees. So if you have an accident, another type of accident, where you are losing heat in the reactor, chances are you may have rock formations or solidifications of fuel in the reactor. And that might be a problem for the reactor. It may not, strictly speaking, be a safety problem, but it could cause efficiency, and it will cost you money to do maintenance and to address the situation. Another challenge is with the corrosive nature of the fuel salt, because it's using fluoride salt. So this type of fuel is highly corrosive, and compounded with the stress from radiation, this will accelerate metal corrosion inside the reactor vessel. So if you're using the normal stainless steel, as you would see in a conventional reactor, then corrosion will be one of your biggest enemy to address. But of course, there are companies that's looking at anti-corrosive coating, which can introduce additional protections to prolong the life of the reactor vessels. Another part about the technical challenge with modern salt reactor, as briefly mentioned before, running a modern salt fuel cycle, or rather running a modern salt power plant, requires this chemical plant that needs to be co-located together with the modern salt reactor. What it does is it provides purification of salt over time as the fission process goes. And so you produce other nuclei or other chemical substance that needs to be removed on a regular basis in order to maintain the purity of the salt, to maintain the fission efficiency or the efficiency of nuclear fission reactions. And because of that, it also entails the entire challenge of managing this whole chemical process. And it also raises issues about safety, security, or even safeguards. And in terms of safeguards, some people argue that from a uranium and maybe even in the thorium fuel cycle, there could be production of plutonium or weapon-grade plutonium or even weapon-grade uranium from a thorium fuel cycle that could be potentially weaponized if these materials get into the wrong hand. Right? So, of course, technology has a role to address that, but I think this is also where the modern salt reactors poses a regulatory challenge to the nuclear industry. More so because in the type of traditional reactors, we know how to handle the entire uranium fuel supply, and it's in solid oxide form. Whereas in modern salt, this is a different type of fuel, and it doesn't really follow the traditional fuel cycle up to a stage of after enrichment, right? And the spent fuel management is still something that is being investigated. And right now, there is no mature industrial supply chain to manage and handle spent fuel from modern salt reactors. So that itself poses a regulatory challenge as to how to ensure the future security and safeguards of modern salt reactors.
Thank you so much, Victor, for taking us through all of the pros and cons of MSR technology. I just want to briefly touch on the other technology, the PWR technology, because that's also still being developed. Is there any particular pros or cons you want to highlight of the PWR technology?
I think the immediate advantage or pros of PWR technology is they are readily available. They are much more readily available than modern salt reactors. And there are existing industrial supply chains that can support the commercialization of these reactors. But the technical challenge is the industry still have to be able to prove that modularity, making smaller PWRs can work and can work commercially on a commercial viable basis. That is something that the industry needs to demonstrate. The only company that has managed to have a PWR FNPP is Rosatom, right? The academic Lomonosov. That's the only floating nuclear power plant. PWR, MSR, whatever it is, that's the only floating nuclear power plant that's in operation in the world today, right? And we are yet to see reports from that nuclear reactor to see what is the commercial viability of that business model of having nuclear power, floating nuclear supporting remote communities. What are the challenges or technical challenges that Rosatom has encountered in operating this particular floating nuclear? So those are unknowns and questions, which essentially will translate to challenges of how commercially viable that PWR FNPPs are going forward into the future. And of course, then the natural counts of PWR FNPP, it will be the same as a large reactor. So how do you manage your spent fuel, right? Once you remove from a reactor, then how do you contain, how do you safely store spent fuel on site? After that, taken to a geological storage site, what do you do with the spent fuel? Do you do reprocessing or do you just go for geological storage? And this whole suite of issues about floating nuclear, being a floating nuclear, it is still a nuclear reactor, right? So at the end of life cycle, what do you do with the entire batch and the onboard nuclear reactors? So those are the questions that's yet to be answered.
Thank you for listening to part one of episode 11 of Nuclear Matters at CIL. Tune in to part two of the episode to continue hearing Dr. Nian's views on the regional perspectives, including FNPP governance. Have a good day.